Hi, I'm Mike Nagrant, and you're listening to Chefs on the Grill from Chicago, Illinois.
4, 3, 2.
One more time.
Welcome back for another edition of Chicago Magazine Chefs on the Grill podcast. Chefs on the Grill is a collaboration between Hungry Magazine and Chicago Magazine, and you can find all of our interviews at www.hungrymag.com or www.chicagomag.com. On June 30th, 2007, after 27 years, Umbria Restaurant, located in the Belden Stratford Hotel in Lincoln Park, will serve its last meal. Umbria is the brainchild of chef owner Gabino Sottolino and Let Us Entertain You Uber restaurateur Richard Melman. And in the waning days, while the last patrons settled down in the familiar leather banquette seating, under the rich chocolate wooden wainscoted walls, and enjoy the last plates holding what is now a Spanish-inflected refined French cuisine, we caught up with Chef Sottolino for a reflection on his career and on the end of the restaurant. In the late 70s, Chicago was truly a meat and potatoes town, a spot where fat, juicy steaks and stench-laden cigars dominated the culinary landscape. Amidst the heartland dining, there were still a few culinary innovators, Jean Panchet at Le Francais, Fernand Gutierrez at the Ritz, and Gabino Sottolino at Le Perroquet. Today's legends and hotshots such as Charlie Trotter, Rick Bayless, and Grant Ackett stand upon the backs of these men. While Banchet was the universally regarded legend, Sottolino's was, in some ways, the Ackett's or Trotter of his day, the culinary innovator and the man who introduced Chicago to Nouvelle Cuisine. But Sottolino almost didn't make it into the kitchen. Growing up in the Spanish port town of Vigo, his mother wanted him to be a priest, and so she sent him away to the seminary when he was 13.
It was a passion for my mother, and he was proud to have a son going to be a priest.
But the seminary was an unforgiving place, where when a rule was broken, the young Sottolino would be forced to kneel on pebbles and have his hand whacked with a piece of wood used to hold up the windows in the seminary.
I say I'm a religious guy, and I believe in God like everybody else, but I'm not a practical guy who go to church every day. I prefer to be in the stove, next to the stove, than being next to the altar, you know. So I escaped two times. The third time he threw me out. The best thing happened to me. So I never forget, after threw me out, I find myself in 13 years old, and he find a job. And I started bellboy, and then in the kitchen, since then, I never stopped. And I create a passion for what I've been for 53 years now.
At first, the cooking world was just as unforgiving as the seminary. Sottolino was an errand boy getting mail and cigarettes for the chefs he worked for.
You know something, though? The funny part of that, is that you've been treated like a dog, if you want to say, sometime, you know. But it was the time. It was a different era. It was difficult at times. And to get a job, if you don't have a good recommendation for somebody, you don't get a job at the time.
Sure.
Because of them, I was able to go around the world and meet so many chefs and have so many teachers, you know.
Even something as simple as cleaning the heavy copper pots back in those days was an intensive labor.
We used to take salt, lemon, and paprika, and make this thing mixed together real well, and then with a brush, and if the pot they have a little stain, it was not shiny, you take the whole pot, throw it in the sink, wash it again, two or three times, just basically to make you mad and suffer. We used to do that all the time. Ah, that's dirty. Throw it out. That it was unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. You barely can move the pot by yourself. You need to have somebody to help you to turn it to them. I call the foundation of the reality of work for passion. And from there on, then you can make whatever you want to make.
Sottolino took these hard lessons with him. He set out on his own and worked in the kitchens of the Plaza Athénée in Paris and various hotels, and he eventually took over the helm of La Perroquet here in Chicago in 1974. In some ways, he was as equal a taskmaster as his mentors. Whenever a new hire would come on board, Sottolino would give them an earful to make sure they were committed.
In a very high temperature in the kitchen, you will sweat your pants. Secondly, your pay is very, very low. I will try to pay you the less I can pay you. And third, you spend have a lot of hours. No, you think coming and tell me our time I living. You know what time you coming, but you don't know how time you living.
In other ways, Sotolino is very different. Seeking more of a financial stake for his work, he joined Richard Melman and helmed the kitchen of the Pump Room, where he hired one of Chicago's first female sous chefs, Nancy Immel.
The French chewed my ass for that. Oh, yeah. I think I was a very... I respected the woman in our work and as a person. And professionally speaking, is out there some woman that is more capable as... is are much more capable than men. And I thought, why to give the opportunity to a person you can trust, and she worked hard as she worked. And boy, we work our ass off. I mean, we work as much you can possible do. And the point is that when I was questioning, my, you know, so many French chefs are there that they can take the opportunity, and I say, so what has to do with me? I need to choose where I think that they make the right position for the right person, and a person I can trust.
By 1980, Sotolino and Melman had gone on a tour of Europe, and they decided to bring a taste of the French innovation they witnessed back to Chicago in the form of Ambria. Featuring Sotolino's interpretation of the nouvelle cuisine practiced by Francis-Paul Bocuse, Michel Girard, and the Trois Gras brothers, Ambria was an instant success, playing host to foodies and celebrities alike.
Because of that, and because of the things, I have Michael Jordan come over here, Placido Domingo, Jules Briner, you name it, everybody. One of the things I preserve the I don't allow any, nada, no my customers or no my employees to bother anybody. We preserve the privacy of each individual come over here, no matter which one.
While celebrities were the norm, Sotolino was a taskmaster when it came to the restaurant's rules, such as their jacket policy or their no-smoking rule. And he wouldn't even break those for someone like Mr. T.
But he bring Mr. T. And Mr. T, this guy walking here with sneakers. All the chains, you know, he has all the chains all over the place. Make look like a chalk to me.
Yeah, but anyway. He has a mohawk.
Yeah. So he want to eat over here, I say. Sorry, but you need to go put a jacket and no sneakers. You need to change it. You can have it. And you don't. I say, you are.
Sotolino's limits applied to even the most distinguished guests. Former Chicago Symphony Orchestra conductor Daniel Barenboim, a huge fan of cigars, was forced to eat in the lobby of the hotel when he smoked.
You need to have rules, and the rules need to apply to everybody. If you start to, you know, Daniel Barenboim is a very good friend of mine. He likes smoked cigars. You know what I used to do? Put it in the on the bar in the corner against the last table against the window. Eat out there, not in the restaurant, outside. And we put a table and eat over there.
In the lobby, or
yeah, yeah. But it was the only way.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a friend of mine? Yeah. But you know, he come in after. Most of the time, he was not worried. When he coming in, because he call, he say, hey, can I have dinner? I say, sure, come. It's no people over there. I say, you cannot eat in the restaurant. I mean, you can smoke in the restaurant. Go smoke over there. You need to have a rule for everybody.
Of course, Ambria was Sotolino's place, and he broke his own rules, a point one guest wouldn't let him forget.
I come to the table, and I say, I guess we have a problem. And the guy, I mean, no, we don't have no problem. Oh, yeah, we have a problem. You can't smoke a cigar over here. What do you mean? Who are you to go to the thing? I say, I'm the owner of the restaurant. I happen to be the owner of my restaurant. You can smoke over here. And he say, I will smoke a cigar. I go all over the place. Man. I say, this is my restaurant. I pull the chair. I say, you out. But first, pay the bill. Pay for what you're eating and care about. It's right in the menu that you have. You can smoke a cigar over here. You can smoke cigarettes, but you cannot smoke a cigar. If you want to smoke a cigar, go in the lobby, but not here. He cares so pissed off on me. He cares who pissed off. He kind of intended to punch at me. And I say, if I was you, I don't touch that. I'm not allow you to face me. So the other guys, he was kind of in shock. And then the last thing, you think I could believe you? You come over here in sneakers and tell me I walk over there, I go spend it. I say, I wear what I want. This is my restaurant and you out. So all four out.
While Ombria was taking off, Sotolino was an active partner at Let Us Entertain You, developing Shaw's Crab House, Scusi, Un Gran Cafe, and Cafe Baba Riba.
Baba Riba, when I opened Baba Riba, people thought I was crazy.
Yeah, there were no
including
tapas.
including my partner, you know. My partner thought I was crazy. Festival and I understood tapas, it was topless. I say, no topless, it's tapas.
Gran Cafe was transformed into Sotolino's other signature restaurant, the French bistro like Mon Ami Gabi. To build Mon Ami, Sotolino worked again as he had as a young chef, giving everything.
I don't believe in something I'm not involved in directly. When I opened my second Mon Ami Gabi, I spent the 3 months working from 7 o'clock in the morning to basically 10 p.m. at night. I used to go and by the third month, I was sick. I used to go home, put my feet on the bathtub. I was not sleeping. My eyes were open. I was so tired, I was not able to. But it was worth it.
Sotolino's commitment wasn't confined to Mon Ami. He spent just as much time dedicated to Ombria.
Because I spend more time in the restaurant. My kids grow up without seeing me because I was here. And my daughter never forget about that. I remember the day my daughter graduated from the University of America, University in Washington, D.C. And we go for the graduation. And she gave me a kiss, embraced me, and said, "Daddy, I hope you spend more time with us. This is the only thing I'm not proud of. You never spend enough time with us, with Mark and myself." And my tears fell apart. I dedicate more time to the restaurant than I dedicate my kids. Do I do it again? I don't know, Mark. Mike, I don't know if I will do it again. But if we were again new and start again new, I don't thought. I might even go the same way. Of course, I believe when you do something that you believe in it and you work very hard for it, and you're so proud about it, you need to put all the energy behind and reinforce it with the passion. And that is difficult to recreate anew again. That's the reason at one point I want to say, okay, this closely be a mark of excellence. I have a great team. I have the best team in the world. From Chris Meir to Michelle to Christian. I have guys who work in 27 years from me, some ones even longer than that because I bring them from the pump room over here, like Bob Banspare and Tanya in the kitchen, and I think we have about seven or ten people from the beginning still with me over here.
Of course, some of Sotolino's folks have left to make a name for themselves. He's been a mentor to Takahashi Yagahashi, Scott Harris and Mia Francesca, and Muhammad Islam of Agridu. Sotolino considers mentoring as important as cooking.
You need a, and when you create a legacy, to me, it's not only be a good teacher, but also you need to be a person that cares. After these guys you teach grow up and move on in life, you need to let them move on. Keep in touch with them. Most of the professionals hate that a person worked for you for 10 years, for example, then this guy is doing sometimes better than you do, and you hate that he go in his own to do something. I'm not that way, because I believe that everybody has a chance to do that.
In addition to mentoring and building new restaurants, Sotolino travels and spends 2 months out of every year in the south of Spain, paying attention to what Ferran Adrià and the new breed of molecular gastronomists are doing. Sotolino believes that ultimately Adrià's cuisine is good for the imagination, but cautions that there's only one Adrià, and that young chefs need to find their own way. He recently had a conversation with an owner of a rustic Spanish restaurant who said it's tough to find anyone who wants to cook classic food anymore.
And I met with this guy. He have a beautiful restaurant, my favorite restaurant in Spain. And you know what it is? It's the rustic Spanish food, but in a modern way. But I went over there. I want to eat the rustic food. I want to have a good paella. I want to have a cochinillo, a roasted cochinillo.
Something a la plancha, like a nice octopus.
I want octopus. I want the sardine on the stick, on the cooker, on the outside. Okay? I look for my frustration in which I was sitting with the chef, which I appreciate. It's owner of the restaurant. And we was talking, and he tell me, Gabino, I can't find anybody who want to cook. He was telling me, I can't find every kid who come out from the school, culinary school, he want to work in El Bulli.
Everybody wants to be Ferran Adrià.
Exactly. And that's just the problem.
Sochelino keeps his eye on the competition because even with the closing of Ambria, he's not retiring anytime soon. Even with the James Beard Award and the Spanish National Medal of Merit from the King of Spain, he's still opening restaurants.
I'm reinvented Mon Ami Gabi, which has been a success, a tremendous success all over the place. Not only in Vegas, but in Washington, mm-hmm. Obrook, now in Virginia, very soon someplace else. Baba Riba, after years of thinking, we opened in Vegas. It's a great success. Now we added something to the Baba Riba plate.
Sochelino's focus on the future ultimately tempers what will be a bittersweet day at the end of June. But make no mistake, he's content with the decision to close Ambria.
I tell you, I'm proud of Ambria like nobody has. I'm sad a little bit, yeah. But I'm going now from the top. I don't want to look behind and say, I lost it. I don't.
I hope you enjoyed this version of Chicago Magazine's Chefs on the Grill. Thanks for listening, and once again, if you have any feedback, please send it to MJNAGRAN@hungrymag.com. And in the meantime, stay hungry.